Hello and welcome to Android Developers Backstage. I'm Chet Haas from the Android Toolkit team.
I'm Romain Guy from the Android team.
Wait, what are you doing here? Tor must be out, right?
No.
I'm still here.
What?
I'm back.
Who let you back in the room?
Me. My badge still works.
All right.
Yeah, so this is Tor from the Android Tools team.
And we are talking with no guest today.
It bailed again.
It is a guestless episode.
Super unreliable guests.
We did this on purpose, right? Because we wanted to chat about a bunch of stuff. Or was it that we just couldn't get around to getting a guest? We will never know.
No.
But it seems like we had a bunch of stuff to talk about. I don't know. We're trying to figure it out. We spent a long time coming up with an agenda in the last 2 minutes. And there was a bunch of conference stuff. So some of us were doing traveling, going around speaking and going to talks and learnings. There were so many learnings in the last month.
Well, recently there was a Kotlin Conf tour. You were there.
I was. And you were too, right? I feel like I saw you there. Yeah.
No, except I was working. I was giving a talk.
Yes.
Were you together? Was one of you taking the other? Did
we
you
avoided
go Dutch?
Each other as much as we could.
We pretend we don't know each other at conferences.
It was a really, really great conference. It was in Amsterdam. So beautiful city, lots of history and all that stuff. And
amazing venue.
What's that?
Amazing venue.
Yeah, it was
such an American take. Lots of history and all that stuff. I like that. Right. So cute. I just want to wrap
it up. I know.
I
spent the whole afternoon in the historical museum. It was great. The content was fantastic. And you might know that I'm a big fan of Kotlin.
So, I've heard that before. Yeah.
So to go to sort of the main conference of the year and see the latest developments, great.
Were you a fanboy at a developer conference?
I was.
I want to see that.
I was.
Oh, you should have seen him.
Hottie, can I get a selfie with you?
Oh, he took selfies with everyone.
Were you giving a talk there?
No.
Okay, so you were just attending.
I just went to attend.
Wow.
Yeah, and the big themes this year were Kotlin 1.3, which came out last week. We should actually talk about that.
Yes, we should.
We'll coroutines were big, of course, because they're stable in 1.3. There was a lot of talks about multi-platform and Kotlin native, so it seems to be very important to the Kotlin community. And lots of feel-good numbers, like the adoption rate of Kotlin keeps going up.
I was very impressed. They basically shipped a Kotlin 1.3 release candidate the week before KotlinConf, and I thought, aha, we're going to have 1.3 big announcement in the keynote.
Oh, conference-driven development. We
yeah,
were all
and
expecting
the keynote
it.
Came and went. They didn't release it. And so, they resisted the urge to say, okay, here it is,
so
and we'll fix it in post. If there was a blocking bug, we'll fix it in post. They didn't do that. They basically continued to ship RCs.
Well, the dev had a small mention, I think, in the keynote that it would be available like within a week or two.
Yeah.
So they knew, but they didn't make a big deal out of it, which was nice.
No, it's nice. It's nice they hold the quality bar high, without marketing compromises.
Yeah, they obviously don't have enough marketing people in their company if they're not doing that.
Yeah, so it actually, it released a couple days ago, I think. Was it yesterday? Monday?
2 days ago, yeah.
Yeah, when we were recording
Since then, I've been busy updating all my laptops and computers to download Kotlin 1.3.
Yeah, what is your favorite feature in 1.3?
Hard to pick. I guess probably the unsigned types. Because graphics programming, we love unsigned numbers, and finally they are available in a managed language.
So how is that represented internally?
So it's actually pretty clever. They just use integers for instance, the unsigned int.
Yeah.
It's just an integer, and they use a new feature of the language called inline classes. So you can create a class that has only one member, and that member has to be a primitive type. So you can have methods and use it like a regular class, but at compile time, it just basically goes away. When you look at the decompiled, when you decompile the bytecode, you see that, it's just integers all the way down. And the unsigned integers, it's pretty smart because, the way computers deal with integers, whether you have an unsigned integer or an integer, most all the operations except the division and then modulo stuff like that work exactly the same. So they're effectively free, and it's really cool that now they're available in Kotlin.
Yeah, see that I was not going to say that unsigned ints are my favorite feature because it's not.
Because you're wrong.
But my favorite feature is inline types. So I guess,
yes. They're related.
Yeah, exactly. So you're just adding one more thing to it. But the whole point of inline types is that you can basically, create a new type and not have confusion without the performance penalty. So for example, if you want to have a different...
A color int?
Well, a simple example might be temperatures. Let's say you want to have a Celsius temperature and you want a Fahrenheit temperature.
What was the first one you mentioned? I don't get that one.
Celsius.
Yeah.
That's the one that makes sense, the metric one.
Huh.
So you can create these two classes. You can have a Celsius temperature and you can have Fahrenheit temperature. They're really going to compile down to ints. But if you just used ints today, or probably should use floats, right?
Yes, floats.
But a single primitive type. Well, with FairNet, you don't need ints because they have so, you know, such precision. You can now make sure that people are passing the right thing to you. So it's a bit like we have the resource type annotations in Android, yeah, where we make sure this int actually has a meaning. Well, now you get compiler enforcement. Yeah. And
more
you,
types.
You can even add extension methods to these things, right? So you don't have to pollute the int type with these kinds of methods. You can put them on the Fahrenheit class or the Celsius class.
And a great example in the Android platform, we use integers for colors, and we have the annotation color at color int that the lint checker looks at. But this should have been an inline class if we had had inline classes, you know, 10 years ago.
So does this mean it's going to go in KTX in the extension library?
I don't know yet. We haven't talked about this. It does require Kotlin 1.3, so we have to think about it.
Well, not just that. As I understand it, they are experimental.
Yes.
And I asked Andre, the language architect, about, you know, how does he feel about this feature? Because we want to use it in our code base right now. The specific use case we have is not temperatures, but coordinates. You know, we pass lots of ints around, and some of them represent Android coordinates, some of them represent screen coordinates. And we want to make sure that we don't confuse these things in different calls. So, you know, when you're calling paint methods in Swing, you have to have one kind of coordinate, but when you're getting it from the render in Android, it's another. So we use annotations again for this stuff, but it's not really enforced, and we haven't gone to the trouble of building tooling to make sure this works. So we'd like to switch our code to just start using inline classes. But I wasn't sure if it's experimental, what kind of quality guarantee is there. And he said he feels that the quality is actually good enough for production, but you would never want to put them in API, right? Same thing with coroutines, right? Like coroutines were pretty stable pretty early on, but again, the API was not final. They may want to change it. So, you know, you're going to have to be prepared for the API to change. And that's why you kind of avoid it. But for our internal code,
I would be surprised if there were big API changes. But, you know, there's also, I haven't looked at the stable version of 1.3, but in the last RC inline classes, there are a few gotchas, and I mentioned those in my talk at KotlinConf. Like, if you look at the decompiled bytecode, let's say you have A and B that are two instances of an inline class, and you just do a comparison. You say A equal B. It's going to auto-box on both sides. So it's going to allocate objects, and you're just doing a comparison. So, you know, there can be things that may or may not be what you want in production. So you have to be a little careful with them still. But like you said, they're experimental.
I'm waiting for my favorite feature, which is outline classes, where you just sort of sketchily say what you want the class to do, and then you move on. Just a bunch of to-do statements.
That's the manager speaking.
Either that or the machine learning architect. You know, you just give the broad outline and then you apply a model.
But while we're on 1.3, like I think now is the time for everyone to learn coroutines because, like you said, they're stable. They're part of...
So in fact, everybody can learn them in parallel.
Coroutines are not necessarily parallel, Chet. So coroutines, there are two parts of it. There's a part in the language that's actually fairly small, and then there's a Kotlin X library that builds on what the language offers, and there's a lot of, you know, utilities and APIs built on top of coroutines. But yeah, definitely worth learning because they're going to be more and more important, I think, in the near future for a lot of apps and libraries.
I'm guessing probably a lot of the Android-specific libraries will start leveraging them as well.
That wouldn't
APIs.
Be surprising, yeah. And even, you know, things like, I think it was Christine Alley who had a talk on...
At DroidCon.
Yeah. On coroutines.
Coroutines, and she was doing live coding. Very impressive. She was converting a bunch of Rx stuff, which I also didn't understand, into using coroutines instead.
How about you you start listing what you do understand?
That would be easier, but I don't remember it. Also, there was a talk on coroutines by Chris Baines, I believe, at KotlinConf.
Yes, Kotlin Suspenders, I think it's called.
Okay.
Yeah, all the videos, as I understand it, are available.
They're
now,
all available, so So you can watch them.
They're all in Flemish, of course, so...
And one last feature that's cool in 1.3 is the new contracts. So, you know, it's contract-based programming. So it's basically a small DSL that you can put in your methods. Right now, it's fairly limited, but you can say things like if you receive a lambda as a parameter, if you have a higher-order function, you can have a contract that says that you promise that you're going to invoke that lambda only once, and that allows the compiler to do several things. For instance, you can only initialize variables inside the lambda, outer variables inside the lambda, if you know it's going to be invoked only once. So now with the contracts, you can do that. You can also do things like, you know, you can do null checks in the contracts. That way, like, the compiler doesn't have to repeat null checks when you invoke several functions.
So I'm thinking, I didn't understand what you meant by contracts until you explained it. I'm still not sure I'm there, but that we have certain things in the framework where we expect, okay, we don't really think you should override this, but if you do, you should really call the superclass.
That's right? Exactly it.
So how do you specify that?
So I haven't looked at them in enough detail. Right now, like I said, they're fairly limited to, I think it's mostly null checks and the lambdas being invoked only once, but in the future, you could imagine more features. Like, yeah, so, I know they have more, but.
IntelliJ has had a contract annotation for a long time.
Yes.
And it's basically annotation with a special string syntax as the value. And it was basically where you could say, hey, you know, if this parameter, for example, if the third parameter is true, then the return value will be non-null, things like that. And they use this to basically teach your data analysis and, you know, to be smarter. So for example, if you are calling a string, you know, is not empty method, they could basically then assert something about the return value, that it can't be null certainly if this method returns true. And so the null check gets smarter because if it saw that you called that and it returned true, like you have an if is you know is null or not empty, whatever, then it would know, oh, clearly inside this thing we know that the value is also not null, right? So there's basically ways of providing more knowledge into the data analyzer about APIs and what the API might do if you see a call to it. That's the purpose of this. And so they've had the annotation for a long time, and they've externally documented a bunch of APIs, and we've also used those in Android in a few places, right, to make this same analysis work. And I guess now they've formalized it because what you had in the annotation was just a very weird syntax and was a bit limited, whereas now it's a proper language construct in Kotlin.
It's not just about the syntax, because with the annotations, it was just a static analysis, so you get warning or errors or stuff like that.
Well, compiler is still fundamentally still a static analyzer.
Right, but now the compiler can change the code output. And like the example you are given is that if by construction of the contract plus the API, the compiler knows that in a branch, like the object is not null because you enter the branch because it returns true, and if it's true, it's not null.
Right.
Then null checks can go away, and there's some guarantees about the nullability of the type. So it goes further than with the annotations.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a close second to the inline classes in terms of excitement for me.
So those seem like the major new language features. Were there other
things? Coroutine is the biggest one. Yeah, I mean, I think that one is.
Big, and it's here for real. Like, they've been talking about it, for the past year-ish?
A while, but
more than that. But yeah, they're here for real. They're available in 1.0, like it's the final APIs.
And
there's a really long list of new features in 1.3. They had a blog post a while back, and it was like, you know.
Blog post on the...
Here's, you know, 1.3 general availability, or it might have been like beta, but they basically listed, the JetBrain site had a blog post on what's new in 1.3.
Okay.
There's a lot.
There's a lot of new features in the standard library that comes with Kotlin, like new APIs.
Were there other good talks or tutorials or workshops at the conference that people should also check out online?
I think the best thing about a conference is sort of all the hallway conversations. So that's why I went there. I could have watched the videos from home.
But the people listening to this now that didn't go can't do that. So
they should have kicked themselves and they should have gone. Book their tickets for next year.
Okay, so sorry you couldn't go, but it was really cool and lots of interesting people that Tor met. He's got like a fan wall up in his office now. It's a little embarrassing, but we put up with it.
And then you were in Ukraine?
I was in Ukraine, which was great. I've been talking to the organizer of the GDG DevFest Ukraine for a few years, and Vasily has been asking me to go to this place, which is really far from the place that I am, for a while, and I kept politely saying no, and then finally went this year, and then tied it into then attending DroidCon UK a couple weeks later. It was great, and I'm really glad I went because it was the last one. So I closed that down.
Interesting. Yeah, I almost went, but because I was going to KotlinConf, then DroidCon, I felt like flying three times in the same month between Europe and the US was a little much.
Yeah.
Or you could just do what Chet did, which is to stay the entire time.
I'm not sure my wife would be happy if I left her with the kids for a month.
It was a long time. It was a long 2.5 weeks, but worth it. Also, not a terribly easy city to get to, Lviv, which I don't think they have enough vowels in Ukraine. I wasn't sure until I landed how to pronounce the city name because there's simply not enough vowels between the consonants. But Lviv was a lovely city. It was a great conference, very well organized. Talks were really good. They are not online yet. They will be. I'm not sure what the forum is. I assume they'll be posted to YouTube eventually.
The talks that you gave there, we gave together in an augmented form, actually.
Right.
With prettier slides, because that took care of
that. That's the main thing. Yeah, so everyone should understand that the talks that Romain and I give There's the content, and then there's the look of the slides. And if the slides are ugly, it means that I created those slides. And if the slides are pretty, it means that I probably created a lot of the content, and then Roma panicked and actually rewrote a bunch of the slides to make them look decent. So that's what happened for DroidCon. So basically, I wrote the most of the trash talk that I gave in Ukraine and gave that talk.
Oh, yeah, because it's a talk on garbage collection.
There we go.
It's not a bad talk. It's the name of the talk, Trash Talk.
It's basically, it's a talk about the evolution of art from Dalvik and the evolution of art over time and why maybe allocations, especially small frequent allocations, are really not as big a deal as they used to be. And maybe the patterns of Android development have changed, and then some details on why that is and some demos. And then we supplemented that with more material going into DroidCon. Homa completely rewrote every slide to actually make them look decent. And then we gave that again at DroidCon. Which just happened, what, last week, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, it was a fun talk to give. It was more fundamental than, you know, what's new in Android that we give at Google I/O, for instance. Yeah. It was good to talk about more technical stuff.
There's three talks that we tend to do over time. There's, like, the original ones that we gave a lot of were, well, we wrote this big thing in the system, and now we're going to tell you how it works, right? That's... it's not an easy talk to give, but it's certainly a natural talk to give for people that are working on the system. I don't do that as much anymore because I don't go to a lot of meetings. Another kind of talk is the what's new in Android, which is sort of the scattershot of, you know, same thing, what's new in tools. Like, well, here's a bunch of new features.
A dramatic reading of the release notes.
Yeah, basically. Curly brace, carriage return. And then the third talk, I think, is my new bestie. Which is the, here's an interesting part of the system that it would be good if people understood better, and we'll learn about
ourselves.
That thing. We can talk about the engineers that work on that thing. So for the trash talk, we sat down with the art team a couple of times, said, here's what we're talking about. Can we get some more information on how this stuff works? Are we correct in our assumptions here? And then we go out and explain this. And it's sort of, in my mind, it's linked to exactly why we do the podcast. Like, we're not talking about the API surface. We're not talking about, here's how you call this method. You can get that from the docs, or you're probably getting it from Stack Overflow. But we are talking about how stuff works.
It's something you and I, we've been giving talks together for 12, 13 years now.
Long time.
Yeah. Oh, geez. I don't know how I can still do this with you. But we've always done that, right? Like, we always explain how things work internally, because if you understand what's behind the API, then you can better use the API, or at least if you run into issues or bugs or performance, you know, problems, that you may have an idea of what to do. It's also interesting, I think.
It is more interesting. Like, as an engineer, I like to know how stuff works. I assume that everybody else does too. I also assume that it makes you a better developer for that platform if you get it. So it's not just, you know, can I use an enum here? Can I, you know, allocate a rect object temporarily? But why do I need to care, and when should I care, right? Because of my understanding of what's actually going on under the hood.
It's also an interesting, in some cases, it's almost an interesting puzzle, like for the talk on garbage collection. So we wrote a few demos trying to show on KitKat or Oreo when jank happens because of garbage collection, or how it can affect performance of your memory access. So it's almost this puzzle of, like, even though we understand, or we think we understand how the garbage collector works, like, going through the act of writing an application that makes the garbage collector do what you think it's going to do can be slightly more difficult than it seems.
Yeah, especially these racy concurrent systems where it's not going to do that thing that you want it to do right now. It's going to do it in its own sweet time. Or, like, some of the assumptions, the classic one that I hit in writing this talk was one of the demos I wanted to show, well, if you fragment the heap, then you're going to run out of memory when you still have a lot of memory available, and it's very easy to show on Dalvik. And then I went to Lollipop and said, well, I can show the same bug all the way up until O, because we actually only defragment in the background. And so I ran the same demo on L, and it didn't crash, and I didn't know why. And it's because, well, actually it wasn't doing what you thought it was, because if it needs the memory, it will defragment immediately, synchronously, when it needs to allocate. And like, okay, well, now I've learned something new, and my demo didn't work.
And then you can talk about it and spread the information.
So we gave that at DroidCon.
Yeah, you forgot. So you said three types of talks that you give.
Oh, yeah.
You forgot one type.
I did forget one type. Most important type is
comedy talks.
Yes. So these, some of the conferences we go to, I should say, notably not ADS or Google I/O, because they're too professional, I guess. starting with DevOps, we used to give a lot of talks at DevOps, still one of my favorite developer conferences, although not a very mobile crowd, so we haven't been back there in 3 or 4 years. But some of the conferences like to not just communicate information, but also be sort of an encompassing, engaging event for the developers, for the people attending. So I had this idea a few years ago. I said, well, sure, I'll do that Android talk, but do you have an extra slot where I could actually do a comedy talk? And the organizer, Stefan, was very open to that. He's tried all kinds of things. You should see some
DevOps,
of the promo videos.
Yeah, DevOps always done interesting things. Like they would have like DJs. There was someone showing up on a motorbike on stage.
Yes.
Lots of interesting things they try.
The promo video for way back in, I don't know, 2005 or something, Meet Your Heroes, very disturbing.
Oh, I remember. Yeah, where someone was talking.
James Gosling.
Well, a fake James Gosling. Yeah. But yeah. That was very creepy.
Very funny. Anyway, so they were open to it, and I did the satire talk there, and then for another couple of years at DevOps, and now these smaller conferences, I'll say, sure, it'd be great to talk about Android. Do you have a little extra time?
And my favorite thing was that you didn't advertise it as a comedy talk. And I would, knowing that, sitting in the audience and watching other people as it dawns on them that this isn't a serious talk, it's even funnier than the actual comedy.
That had happened before, right? Where I remember when we were at Sun Microsystems, you wrote a couple of funny like blog posts, like technical blog posts that were kind of making fun of programming, and some people would take them really seriously. Like when you were, weren't you proposing to add line numbers
yes,
and go to
line
back
numbers
to
and go to.
And
yep.
Someone was explaining like, well, you know, this is a bad idea because like, yes, I know.
And yeah, the people that take it seriously, like that's funnier than the original joke, right? Just to see how far I can take it and yet people will still take it seriously because, you know, we're engineers.
But I think 10 minutes later, I'm still sitting here wondering how you shut down the Ukraine conference.
How I shut it down?
Yeah.
Well, I know that it is no longer happening.
Well, because
was there some scandal? Were you able to like leave the country using airplanes?
No, Tor. Obviously, it's because nobody can top whatever Chad did there. So
all I know is it stays in Ukraine, up and they said, "Congratulations! We're so glad you're here. By the way, this is the last time we're doing this. This is a lot of work, and we have lives to live."
Oh, okay. So right. Not as juicy as I was hoping.
No, okay. No. Right. But the juicy thing was, so I did go there thinking, well, there's been unrest in certain areas in Eastern Europe, and this is always on your mind, like when you're traveling to places you've never been to before. So we're taking a city tour on Sunday morning. It was a beautiful town. It was really nice pedestrian area downtown. Someone compared it to Prague. They said it's a lot like Prague, except without the river. And I thought, the river is a pretty big part of Prague.
Yes. Did it have a lot of history and stuff?
A lot of history and stuff, yeah. Okay. So as an American, it was just cute. As we're walking down the main street, there comes a military parade. So you got missiles and tanks and armed transport coming right through the main part of town. I thought, I think those are Ukrainian flags.
Well, some people walk their dogs, they just walk their tanks.
That was fun. Yes. So then we went to DroidCon, did the same thing. So we did a trash talk, another comedy talk. And there were other talks there. Christina did the one on coroutines.
Right.
There was another one. Jake did one that I also didn't understand because it was about
that
Dagger.
Was great to watch. So Jake's talk on Dagger and how to improve Dagger for when you're debugging. So you wrote a backend for Dagger that's reflection-based, so you don't have to wait for the annotation processor to do its job when you're just iterating over your code. Very interesting. It was great to sit next to Chet because Chet's face was just hilarious. trying to understand Dagger concepts and all that. There was an interesting talk about Layout Inflator by Michael Bailey.
Yep.
So it was a deep dive, like not just the API, but almost a code review, like how it's implemented and how does it do whatever it does. And that was kind of a trip down the memory lane for me because I don't think I've touched that code since like 2008.
It's interesting and nice to see talks like those because I think it's good, just for the same reason that we did the trash talk, it's kind of good to give people an understanding of how the system works. There are so many parts of the system that we will never get around to explaining because either it didn't occur to us to do that or, we took a look at it 12 years ago and haven't looked at it since or whatever. But to actually have someone go in and take a look at the AOSP code and say, here's what's going on here. This is why this thing happens this way.
You also saw a great talk on designing APIs for performance.
Oh, yeah. That was really good. So
the Litho team,
right,
I believe.
Some of the folks from the Facebook Litho project talked about some of the concepts. So Litho itself is interesting, and I've seen talks on Litho before and docs. But this was from a higher level. It was more what were the motivations for designing something like Litho, and they had other explanations of other I think reactive frameworks as well. And they were talking about it from an API design standpoint.
So to make this discussion useful for our listeners, can you both commit to providing show notes for your favorite talks? You know, like links?
For the blog post that probably nobody reads, all these talks that you want them to watch.
Yeah, and actually, sure. I don't know. Some of the talks were recorded. I don't think all of them were.
At DroidCon, the comedy talk was not, which is fine. No, that was pure chaos. But I thought the other ones were.
Okay.
Yeah, they're all posted. In fact, you have to go through the login.
There's a free login on Skills Matter.
Okay.
So yeah, we'll point to the.
But that's a very good point. We can definitely do that.
And then we have a conference coming up.
We do.
The Android Developer Summit next week.
Yes.
This is the time of the recording.
Broadcast, I hope, slash assume.
There is a live stream.
Yeah, there's going to be a live stream of most of the
sessions. There are
viewing
parties that are organized throughout the US, at least, in movie theaters for some reason.
Really?
Yes.
Huh. I would like to go to that.
Oh, actually, so there's a movie theater right next to where we're doing it. Maybe we should go to the movie theater and watch us.
I believe that might be one of the ones where they're doing that.
So it's like an overflow, maybe. It's more comfortable. I mean, you were talking about the DevOps conference a while back. The best part about that conference was that it was hosted in a movie theater.
Yeah, the problem
is sitting in a reclining seat with major jet lag. It was pretty hard to stay
awake.
But
it's too comfortable. I remember every time Chet wanted to go watch a talk that would, you know, about, I don't know, design patterns like MVP or MVVP, whatever it was called. And I would tell Chet, no, you're going to fall asleep because, you know, you're in this comfy chair, like dim light, it's
still,
after lunch. And every time you would fall asleep.
I think it's a good problem.
I feel like, you know, at I.O.
and many other conferences I've been to, the seats are so close. You're really in people's personal space.
I.O.
is
the exact opposite in terms of seating compared to DevOps. You have tiny, uncomfortable chairs.
Yeah. You're definitely, there's no chance you could fall asleep.
But you get really close to your neighbors.
Yes. So, okay. So that's the Developer Summit.
Yes.
So Developer Summit, like organized by the Android team.
Yes. It's for us, we feel like it is a release valve for talking about the stuff that we never get a chance to at I.O. Right. Oh. So I.O., there's always an emphasis on what is new. How can we make sure that everybody knows the things that, you know, are new and therefore confusing? And so the bar is pretty high for getting in there with content that could be more timeless.
It's also a big conference, so we have to take into account the time it takes for folks to move from one room to another to get in line, so the talks are a little shorter. It's way more complicated to organize. And different feels. So Android Developer Summit, there was one that has happened before in 2015. That was our first and only one. And as far as we can tell, the feedback was very positive, so we decided to not do it again.
Well, it was more that it's so much work.
Yeah, it's a lot of work.
I was relieved the next year when we weren't doing it.
Yeah,
but, it's time.
It's at the Computer Science Museum, like right next to campus. And one of the reasons we're doing it this way is to allow as many engineers on the Android team as possible to come to the event and be available to the audience to answer questions or just have chat and gather feedback and give talks.
And give talks. So it's a much wider variety and audience of people that are actually giving the presentations because it's much easier. It's a lower bar to get into the conference. There's more Android talks. There's more space there. It's closer to campus.
And to get back to what you were saying about Google I.O., so Chet and I were both on the content committee to choose the talks. And one of the principles behind like which talks we would pick was, are the talks technical? So there were a couple occurrences of, you know, two talks on the same topic. Every time we went with a talk that seemed more technical than the other one.
So should be good. And there's three different kinds of talks. So there's like a regular session length of what, 40 minutes?
45.
And then we cut that in half. So we have some sessions that are actually two talks of 20 minutes. So a little more domain specific. So we thought we could sort of focus them, do them quicker. And then there's a bunch of lightning talks as well.
Which are 5 minutes.
Yes. So we submitted a talk and they said, oh, that'd be great, but we're running out of session slots. Could you do that in 20 minutes? We're like, well, we could probably cram this down. And then a couple of days later, they said, how about as a lightning talk? And we said,
It was trash talk.
Yes, it was.
So you can see we'd be really bad lobbyists because we're part of the content selection committee and we couldn't get our own talk in.
They know us too well here. We just have to keep being strangers at other conferences. That's the only way it works. So yeah, it'll be interesting. We'll probably just edit out this section of the podcast when the summit is a miserable failure because we'll be embarrassed about it. But we have high hopes right now going into it.
And then we're launching all kinds of cool stuff, right?
It's not about the launches.
Yeah, no, that was a joke.
That was not a very good joke.
Actually, I think 3 years ago, that's when we launched Instant Run, right? And I think we kind of learned from that lesson. It wasn't
I wrote a demo for that.
You did? Yeah. The whole chessboard and everything, yeah. So, yeah. But, you know, it wasn't quite ready. And so definitely we're not doing that this year. So I think some people are like, ooh, what are you going to launch a studio at Dev Summit? Nothing. So yeah. Please don't be disappointed.
I remember having a conversation with some folks on the marketing side about 3 months ago. They're like, okay, well, what are the things that are going to line up in terms of time frame? What are the launch announcements we're going to have? And like, it's great if something happens to launch at the same time, but this is not the point of the conference. I mean, like specifically not the point of the conference. Yeah. We want to just have technical sessions.
Something happened. I mean, we mentioned Kotlin 1.3 that just came out, so it will be brand new for ADS. We have Android Studio 3.2 that was released recently. 3.3 is in beta.
Yeah, should we talk about those things?
3.4 just entered Canary. So there's still like a lot of things happening around ADS, but it's not, we're not conference driven.
Yeah, so for Studio right now, we have sort of three separate releases, right? So in the stable channel, we have 3.2, 3.2.1 actually, which launched a few weeks ago. In the beta channel, we have 3.3.
No. Let's take it one by one. Big items from 3.2.
3.2 is a big release, right? So 3.2 was the release that we announced at I.O. So our spring releases tend to be big because they're loaded with features to support the platform and things accumulate, right? So it's a feature-heavy release.
App bundle
support was big, but many other things, and I actually don't have them off the top of my head.
I just don't remember. I can tell you one thing that's in 3.2 that saved my life. It's a composite Gradle build now work properly inside the editor.
You promised me this wasn't going to be a Gradle episode.
Can we keep talking about Gradle?
Yeah, there's lots of great Gradle content in 3.2.
Okay.
Yeah, and many, many new features. And, you know, they're not hard to find.
Please look at the release notes. That's what Tor is saying. Please, let me go on to 3.3. Okay.
Well, yeah. No, yeah.
So what's 3.3 about?
So 3.3...
is about beta.
What's the theme?
So actually what we're doing now for the next, little while is we are really focusing on quality, right? So we've been sprinting since we started Android Studio, sprinting to add more features and round out the feature set. So we added many new, we rewrote the layout editor. We've been adding features to that.
We have the whole profiler suite.
There's a bunch of new stuff, right? And so there's a lot of great features in Studio, but we never really took the time to handle product quality. So we have quite a few bugs that people have filed that we haven't fixed. You know, we have more exceptions happening in the background than we want. There were some memory leak problems in 3.1 that we fixed, but we don't, we've been working now on a bunch of infrastructure to catch these things more systematically. So we're just putting a lot of work into fixing what we call critical user journeys and sort of polishing the product to a much higher level of polish, basically. So that's what we're doing. So 3.3 is just a beginning of that, right? So it's not loaded with features. There are some significant things like the navigation editor. You know, we previewed it at 3.2, but it's only going stable in 3.3.
Right.
So there are some new features, but...
So the features of 3.3 are the ones that missed the boat of 3.2.
So, and there are some other things we've done. It's not entirely true that we're all only focusing on product excellence, but it is a main focus for us. So the feature list, doesn't look as long as you'd expect given the size of the engineering team, but it's because we're really going back and sort of working on fundamentals.
Turns out the real work in a software project is actually quality. It's not features.
Yeah, well, and actually, a lot of the IDE is, of course, the IntelliJ IDE, and we have been continuing to merge more continuously. So you're getting a brand new version of the IDE, which of course comes loaded with features. So just in terms of like raw...
My favorite feature is it has a slightly newer UI. Like the UI looks a little different, the theme.
Oh,
like
you're now talking about Studio 3.4.
Oh, it's 3.4. Oh. Okay.
Well, actually, I'm jumping ahead. Hang on. Yeah. Back to 3.2. I had a conversation with Esteban yesterday, and like SysTrace quietly entered the stream in 3.2. Right, so it got added as an alternate profile.
Yeah. Right. That was one of the features we added and showed at I.O. Right. So we have the profiler came with many new features.
And this is
There's
one
the
of
whole
them.
So energy profiler. The list is long.
No, I'm going to finish my point first. Oh. So I'm just putting this out there because I think SysTrace is the most powerful profiling tool that we've always had, and it's also the most confusing. So
it's not confusing.
Usually...
It's intimidating. It's different.
There's a lot of information there, and it's hard to figure out what you need. So typically you would run SysTrace from the command line and it launches a browser window and then you sort of stare at it for a very long time trying to figure out what's going on. And they have an early version of a better UI in Studio. It is very app specific, so it's not the system overview that SysTrace is. So it doesn't show you everything going on, but it shows you the salient points of your application process. one thread at a time. So it's a first step toward having a better systrace experience in general. So I would suggest people go check that
out. Yeah, and as I recall, they fixed a lot of performance issues with it in 3.3. So
they've continued to work on it. Yep.
Yeah.
So let's go back to 3.3. So Chet, are you done interrupting? Or?
Pop, pop, pop. All right.
No, Romain was actually in the middle or something.
No.
No, saying let's go back to 3.3.
Yeah, actually, you are right that in one of the merges, we picked up a new UI refresh from IntelliJ. So they have switched their icons and a bunch of other things. So that is true that maybe looks better in 3.3. In 3.4, we are merging the latest IntelliJ, 2018.3. So we have 3.2 in the stable channel, we have 3.3 in the beta channel, and we now have 3.4 in the canary channel. So if you're really adventurous, and I'd recommend you be adventurous, you can get our canary builds. They're based on the latest IntelliJ, 2018.3. And what they've done there is continuing to work on the UI, and they've taken all the various open dialogues, which you use all the time, open class, open symbol, open file. They're all merged into the search everywhere action, which is now much faster and all integrated. So all the key bindings map to the right tab of the new window, but it's just, it works a lot better than the old UI, and I really enjoy that. And of course, there's many other features as well.
Now maybe I can finally remember the shortcut key for the find symbol, because I can never find it when I want it.
Yeah. Now you can just basically tab through the tabs at the top and you'll get to symbol if you can remember this.
Command-Shift-A.
Command-Shift-A.
And that gives you an input where you can type the name of the feature you want to use.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
And they also have a new run everywhere action, which is similar, but lets you launch configurations and things pretty easily. So there's lots of new features in the IDE.
Yeah, lots of streamlining.
For us, we're continuing to, of course, work on polish in 3.4. But there are some features that also landed there. My favorite one, maybe, and I shouldn't say that because I'm probably forgetting something else. But I've been wanting a new product structure dialog. We call that PSD affectionately internally because it's such a
PSD
mouthful. PSD, the product structure dialogue, right? It's the one where it's basically your view of what is happening in your project in terms of it's a UI to build that Gradle, basically.
Preferences. That's like the preferences for the project, right? Like
that's right.
Everything in there.
Yeah, exactly.
That's
so you know we've big. Had one before, but it was really not very good. So
I always have to click every tab like at least twice before I find like
yeah.
the
so
one
we have a brand new one, which is much more powerful. We put extra work into the dependencies view, right? So it is going to it's going to tell you if your dependencies need to be updated. It'll show you sort of how versions are promoted. Like if you have multiple dependencies on a transitive library, you can see which version it picked and why. There's just a bunch of features in there. So my hope is that when we are finished with this, you don't need to edit build.gradle if you don't want to. Right?
I don't want to.
Like adding a dependency, adding a source flavor, switching your language level to 1.8, like whatever you're trying to do, open up the PSD. And do it there. You don't have to actually know how to type Groovy code. So that's one of the features in 3.4. But there are various others from the base IDE. We probably added a few more. But again, right now we are really trying to focus on quality.
And this is a canary channel, right?
Yeah.
We should point out, because our lawyers tell us to, canaries die. That is, their job in life is to die, right?
So I don't think that's their job in life.
That went dark really quickly.
It is. Yeah, it is.
Chet, tell us how you feel really right now.
You hope that they don't, but that is why they're in the mine. Yep.
Yeah, I'm going to call HR after this.
So that was Studio.
Yeah.
One thing that we launched recently, the Pixel 3.
Yes.
Oh, it's so nice.
So Tor, which one do you use?
I use the Pixel 3, the XL.
The XL, okay.
Yeah, I like the large battery life. And you know, I've seen some people on Twitter complain about the notch. I don't get it. You know, after
you don't
about,
get the notch, or you don't get what they're.
I don't get what they're so upset about. After about 2 days, I didn't even notice it.
Well, you know, some
so,
people.
You know, I guess it's you know up to everyone to make the decision for themselves. Right. But I not at all bothered
you know,
by
to
it.
Reuse our motto, like together, not the same. I myself, like, I've never been bothered by bezels on phone. I know a lot of people care deeply about not having bezels, yeah. So it's good that we have. You know, we have two different phones, and they're slightly different.
So, are you using the small then?
I use the small one. Mainly because it's more comfortable in my pocket.
Yeah, I'm actually very happy that we launched finally because now I don't have to have that ugly case
and I can actually hold
the phone the way it's meant to be held. Not
yeah, much better form factor than that thick, ugly rubber case. I'm using the XL. I would actually go down to the smaller form factor for the same reason. I like the smaller form factor in the pocket. However, I have found on previous phones that every time I move up a size and then I go back to a size that I used to think was perfect, then it feels too small.
So there's a difference this year because the smaller one has a much larger screen than last year's phone, than the Pixel 2. I would say it's probably close to half an inch or something. So you do get like a much larger feel from that small form factor. It's not going to be as big as the XL, but yeah, it's much better than it used to be.
I also like the larger battery. It's nice with the larger.
So I wonder though, using the smaller one, I've also noticed like really good battery life. In particular, I think the platform is much better now at standby time than it used to be because of a lot of the background restriction stuff that's been kicking.
Yeah, and it's a big focus. We're continuously improving the battery life and it's through APIs, like tweaking the platform. Like it's important to the team.
Like on the weekend, especially if I'm out bicycling for many hours and I got the GPS, on the weekend, I have a much more active life that I actually need the battery.
But that's your problem, because if you stay home, then you can charge.
Yes.
Or just take a really, really long extension cord.
There's that. The other thing I really like about the Pixel 3 is I also bought the... is it called the Pixel Slate? No, not Slate. Stand. Pixel Stand. So for the longest time, I've charged my phone, sort of plugging it in the bathroom. Now I have it near my bed, just putting the phone on there. So the wireless charging, and I actually love the new thing they've built for the whole wake-up routine, right? So when you put it on the stand, it goes, oh, what time do you want to wake up? And I just say the time. And what it does is the next morning, 10 minutes before the time, it starts like lighting the screen up gradually in this warm orange that finally gets brighter. I've actually several times woken up slowly by the light before the alarm rings. It's pretty nice.
It's just sitting there in the corner going.
Yes. No, so I wireless charging, I liked it with the Nexus 4. I guess it's the last time I had one that did it. And I still enjoy that.
For me, the Pixel 3, there's two things I really love about it. The tactile feedback, the feel of the phone itself, like we have, more rounded edges, like the back is glass, but it has a special coating, like it feels really good. It almost feels like a rubber of some kind. And it reminds me
a
lot of...
a pre-production device, so it's got stickers. That's what I'm feeling, yeah.
Yeah, it reminds me of Nexus 4. I really liked Nexus 4 for like the rounded edges of the screen. It felt pretty good to
isn't the Nexus 4 that had that like glass back that cracked so easily?
It never cracked for me.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
You have to take care of your phone. You don't need a case.
Okay.
So I really love that. And the camera.
The camera is
obviously the big highlight. Yeah. We have teams at Google are doing a lot of magic with the computational photography, like AI, machine learning, clever algorithms. So we have new features in the camera this year. We have the night sight. A lot of people online seem to be quite amazed by the results.
It is really good.
Yeah, and a lot of those features, they kind of work the same, is my understanding, where we take a lot of pictures and then we combine them together to improve the results. So we do that for the night sight. We have top shot where we take multiple pictures and we try to decide which one is the better one. So when you have a group shot and everybody's like, nobody's smiling at the same time or someone closed their eye, like hopefully top shot will catch the right one.
Does it do combination? I know that we had a feature.
I don't know,
back
actually.
In the Google Plus days when you would sort of like, it would combine different
right.
shots of different
Yeah, that's
faces.
A good question. I don't know if it does. I don't think, but don't quote me on that.
Probably will.
We have the super zoom feature. So we have one camera in the back, but usually when you zoom on a mobile phone, all we're doing is we take part of the image and then we upscale it so it looks pretty bad.
Blurry.
Yeah, it's basically it's a crop, but you
it's
got
a crop that's
your,
upscaled. Yeah, so it looks disgusting.
Yeah.
Here, what we're doing is we're using the natural micro motion of your hand when you're taking a picture. So like slight vibrations in the phone to take several pictures, and from those several pictures, we can increase the resolution of the image.
So but if you're nervous, it does an even better job.
Exactly. It's actually a technique that's similar to what's employed on consoles, like the PS4 Pro. That's what they do 4K rendering. They just render an image that's not 4K, but they just shift it slightly every frame, and then they recombine a higher resolution image. Oh. And it works. It works really well. Like we were in London, we went on a long walk. We chat, and I took a lot of pictures, and I basically used the zoom for every shot, and I was really happy with the results.
Yeah, I was dragging around my big camera, and you had this little one.
Well, I would still prefer to use a real camera, but I'm a little biased.
So it seems like, given that this is Google, wouldn't it be better for a lot of these things, like the night shot? So I don't know how it works. I would like to understand that, but couldn't we just go out to, this big database of images that happens to be on the web and say, actually, somebody took a much better picture of your jack-o'-lanterns than you did, so we're going to have you use that instead.
You could tell the camera team they should try that?
I'm sure they're already doing that. I think that's how the algorithm works. I've made up my mind.
On the camera, I did hear that we have a front-facing camera, which is maybe wide angle. There's something so for we have selfies.
Two, right, so we have two front-facing cameras. There's one that's wider angle than the other one. So, you know, you can zoom in, but now you can also zoom out when you're taking selfies. And the idea is to have a wide-angle lens so you can take group selfies. So, you know, if it's not just you in the frame or you want to capture something that's behind you and that's far away.
It's not just about capturing yourself, but maybe right. where you are. Yeah.
Yes. And before, you need just a very long arm, which most people don't have.
So little selfie solve this sticks. Issue. Do either one of you have a selfie stick?
No.
Say no.
No, I do not.
Okay. All right.
I would actually use a selfie stick if I had one to just beat other people that are using their selfie sticks.
I actually don't think I've ever taken a selfie.
I haven't either.
But Chad does it all the time.
Yeah. He's on Snapchat. He's sending daily photos to his...
Could you please stop, by the way? It's really awkward.
You know what a selfie is, right? It's a beautiful picture that's destroyed by the person standing in the way of the thing.
Yeah. Yep. No, I found out what my kids, I think it might be, I'm not sure which social network has this thing where you send each other's pictures every day. It goes back and forth and it counts it as a streak or something. So it counts the number of days you've done
it. Your kids are streaking. Is that what you said?
I hope that's not the term. I don't remember what it was called, but basically you're trying to maintain this thing, right? It's kind of like the Friends episode where they're throwing the ball back and forth and they're like just excited about, hey, we haven't dropped it for an hour. Let's keep going.
So they gamify like taking pictures?
So the point is that you keep doing this back and forth. And I remember when one of my kids went on vacation, they insisted on the other person maintaining this for them. So they were sort of continuing taking photos for a week while the person was gone so they wouldn't like drop the ball.
I feel obligated to ask why.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Okay.
I'm
too old for this.
Clearly.
Yeah, I don't get it.
Anyway.
I don't get it.
The other, there's so many disturbing things about selfies. The other thing is, I think it's required in a selfie for everybody to look at the picture of themselves instead of the lens.
That's called the selfish.
But like the eyes are never aligned with where the lens is, and camera manufacturers have actually
made that feature for us to build.
Made that difficult. Well, yes, there's that, but also, could you at least show me where the lens is? Because you get people with these different camera form factors all the time. You're like, where is the lens? I don't want to be.
Yeah, that would be feature just a little blinking LED next to the sensor. Like, look at
here.
The blinky light.
Right. Yeah, you have to capture the
attention.
This is
us. We're solving the hard problems of today.
Obviously.
And then the other thing that I've noticed is everybody like popping into a pose, right? So here I am, normal person, standing in front of this thing I want to see. I want to prove that I'm here. And then you cock your head and you give a smile that you'd never give to any other picture anywhere. It seems to be a requirement of selfies. So I'm making notes on this.
You know, I see people in tourist destinations and they're taking selfies and I'm tempted to go and say, do you want me to take your picture? Because I feel like
and
selfies...
then throw their camera down.
So, no, but I don't do it because I've sensed some people actually like taking selfies, which I think they look stupid.
So I don't know if it's my face or the fact that I'm usually carrying an actual camera, but people ask me all the time, everywhere I go, like someone, you know, they're taking a selfie, like, oh, could you please take a picture?
That's why, because if you're taking the picture, that's a really good way to guarantee that
I'm not in the picture. That makes more sense. Okay, I get it.
Anyway, we're starting to run out of time.
I think that was it. That was probably enough. Did we cover selfies enough? I don't know. We could probably go on for that a while on that one.
No, please don't.
Okay. Then I think that's it. Thanks.
Next.
Thank you.